Welcome to Patients at Risk, a discussion of the dangers that patients face when physicians are replaced with non-physician practitioners. I'm Dr. Rebecca Bernard, your host and the co-author of the book Patients at Risk and the author of the follow-up book Imposter Doctors. Today we are going to be discussing an article that was published in October of 2023 in Annals of Internal Medicine. And the article is entitled Inappropriate Prescribing to Older Patients by Nurse Practitioners and Primary Care Physicians. In the end, the article claimed that nurse practitioners were no more likely than physicians to prescribe inappropriately to older patients. Today, I am joined by Dr. Teresa Camp Rogers to evaluate the claims of this study. Dr. Camp Rogers, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's so good to see you, Rebecca.
Thank you. You too. Can you start us out by telling the audience a little bit about yourself and why did you get interested in research?
Sure. I'm an emergency physician. I work as a staff physician at South Central and Laurel, Mississippi. Over the last 3 or 4 years, have become really interested in this topic of nurse practitioners and kind of their continuing introduction into our healthcare system and how we're making sure that that introduction of them into our healthcare system is done safely, keeping the quality and standards of healthcare in our country high. I got involved with research a long time ago and ended up after residency, did a fellowship in cardiac resuscitation, but part of that was a lot of research. And so I actually got a master's in statistics along with that fellowship. I'm kind of at that point where I have enough training to be able to put the pieces together, but I'm not on a statistics consulting firm or anything like that. So I definitely know my limits and can tell you when it's outside of my scope, but I can hopefully help tease apart some of the article.
Well, I'm really happy that you're joining us because a lot of these research studies are, you know, if you just read the summary or the abstract, you know, you really think that it's saying one thing. But when you know about statistics and you delve into the actual report, sometimes it turns out that those conclusions are not really what the study is actually saying. So I think you're going to be very helpful for us to figure out what's going on in this study that was published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, and this was actually published in October of 2023. The name of the article is Inappropriate Prescribing to Older Patients by Nurse Practitioners and Primary Care Physicians. Tell us a little bit about what this study was looking at.
They tried to compare rates of inappropriate prescribing by nurse practitioners to inappropriate prescribing by physicians. If we can go back a little bit and look at the authors, there's 4 authors. They're all out of Stanford, I believe. I believe this is David Chan that notably published the well-written recent paper on the costliness of nurse practitioner care. And, you know, Annals of Internal Medicine is a fairly well-known national publication. It's the publication of American College of Physicians. The impact factor looked up is 39. And for reference, New England Journal is 91. So it's nothing to balk at. I mean, it has a pretty far wide reach. I actually looked at the last several years, how many articles AIM has published on nurse practitioners. And I think there was in the last 20 years, since 1995, almost 30 years, sorry, almost 30 years, they've only published 3 studies on nurse practitioners. And I think that's important. It's important for each of us to look at this issue with an unbiased approach and say, are we actually getting the data? What is the actual truth here? But since there's so few, you know, I think it is important to say why. Why are they publishing it now? The other 2 articles, one was the quality of HIV care, and that was in 2005. And then the other one was an editorial, so I don't count that as a study. And then the second study was outcomes, comparing diabetes outcomes for nurse practitioners compared to physicians. And so you've got 2005, 2018, and 2023. And those are really the only studies. And so I just think it's important to think about why now.
I noticed that the funding source was the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Does that raise any kind of alarm bells for you?
Yes, I think that the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is an excellent foundation, very well established, and has a lot of resources. Promoting nurse practitioners is definitely one of their goals.
Yeah, I mean, they say there's like a little funding note and they say, you know, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation had nothing to do with the conclusions or the design of the study. But, you know, you do wonder because you know that this is an organization that has made it very clear that they have a vested interest in increasing the nursing role in healthcare. So they funded the Future of Nursing report. They've called for nurses to be full partners with physicians. So, you know, not saying that that has biased the study, but it's just something you always take note of when you're reviewing these conclusions where maybe you want to take an extra look at it because you know this is coming from someone that, you know, really wants this report to say a certain thing.
And I think that, you know, if you look at the last 20 to 30 years in medicine, the emphasis on publishing those disclosures and conflicts came about because it's really hard to eliminate it. So I'm glad that they reported it. Of course, it's essential that they report it. But I did think it was odd that there's the reporting of the funding. And then there's a blurb in the middle of the article that says, yes, they funded us, but we promise we're not biased. I just thought it was an interesting addition. So when we look at the actual structure, the question that they're asking, I think, is exactly what we all want to know, regardless of the side of this debate that we're on. And hopefully we're all in the middle, just wanting the truth and wanting to do what's right. But the question is, are the rates of inappropriate prescribing among NPs similar to physicians? And it's actually a good question. It can fit easily into like the PICO format. You've got your population comparison, intervention comparison and outcomes. It's a cohort study. At that point, what we do, once we understand the question and the structure, and you know, we're like, okay, are we all going to buy into this being a good question? One of the next things we can do is look at their background. Do we agree with the way they formulated the problem? And that's where I think it's really kind of starts to fall apart for me. Because if you look right after the title, right after the authors, the first sentence of the entire article tells you exactly their goal. It says, quote, many U.S. states have legislated to allow nurse practitioners to independently prescribe drugs. There's nothing about safety. There's nothing about quality. This article is about legislation, period. That tells me, the reader, the primary goal of the authors is to provide data for the lobbyists to win. The next sentence confirms this. Quote, critics contend that these moves will adversely affect quality of care. And they want to refute the critics. They don't want to know the truth. They're digging in for the critics and they're digging in for legislation. And I think that's really important, you know, as a scientist. I think we should say, you know, you could frame the question totally different. You could frame the background totally different and ask the same exact question. You and I could say, nurse practitioners are a new addition to our healthcare system. How are they prescribing? And we could say, we could do the same study. And so that's where it starts to fall apart for me in terms of the bias.
Like, it just introduces the bias right from the start because they're letting us know that how they want this to come out.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. And I think
that was their null hypothesis, was that there would be no difference between NPs and physicians when it came to inappropriate prescribing.
Right. And, you know, if you keep reading, there are three introductory paragraphs. So that's just the abstract. But if you go down to the introductory paragraphs, they kind of do the same thing. They give a political history of nurse practitioners. There's a lot of talk about nurse practitioner potential. They call out professional organizations for opposing full practice authority in a scientific article. And at this point, we know it's a lot of professional organizations. I think they only cited two, but we know it's a lot more than that. Then they actually give some uncited data. They say that 32 states allow for nurse practitioners to prescribe. But I thought at this point, I went to AAMP website and individually counted the states. And I think it looks like to me, it was only 27 plus DC. And there's no citation in the article for that.
Well, it's so interesting because I kept reading over and over again because they talk about the being authorized to prescribe. And I guess all states allow nurse practitioners to prescribe. It's just the question is, are they allowed to prescribe without having any physician oversight? So it's kind of confusing. They kind of go back and forth in the way that they're discussing it.
Yes. Yes. And there's no reference to where that number is coming from and what specifically is defined as collaboration, supervision, ability to prescribe, and then ability to prescribe certain classes of drug or schedule of drugs. And I think that that's a really glaring deficit in how it's framed in the background, right? And it's really important for us to make sure we're all starting on the same page. One of the things they also do, I thought was interesting, is that they also assume, explicitly state, that NPs don't cost more. And this flagrantly ignores the data from one of their own authors.
That's really strange. I mean, do you have any theories on why this is happening? I was wondering, like, well, maybe he wants to be on both sides of it so he can be, you know, seem unbiased, but it seems very odd.
Yeah, I don't know. It is odd. The next thing they do, and still we're on the, just on the background, but one of the next things they do is they don't represent the correct conclusions from the articles they reference in the background. So the 2018 Cochrane Database Review actually says that while in some cases, NPs for some diagnoses and some conditions, NPs can provide adequate care, but it says effects are uncertain and the education required is not known. That's just 5 years ago. And I would argue and I would contend that we still don't know what education is known. That's a whole nother can of worms about the education.
And especially since in the last few years, we've had reports from nurse practitioner researchers themselves saying, hey, we're kind of getting concerned about the quality of education, especially in emergency medicine, but also even in family nurse practice, where some of these students are reporting really minimal experience. There was one study that showed a significant number had never prescribed a medication one time in their training.
I don't doubt it. Their pharmacology class in a lot of instances is only 11 weeks long. And that's really short, considering everything you need to know just to write a set of medications safely and correctly. And I'm not saying they need to learn all of them. I understand it's a, you know, I understand the purpose and the role of nurse practitioners, but I think just to think about writing a narrow set of medicines safely. Again, in this background, and I'm not going to go through all the ones, but the next one that they reference is a 2021 article by Yang, where the authors try to show that full practice authority is associated with more NPs, but somehow they ignore states like Mississippi, who has no full practice authority, but the highest, one of the highest percentages or per capita of nurse practitioners. So there are a lot of states that don't have full practice authority that tons of NPs. And then the next one, another one by Yang, this is the one that shows that nurse practitioners in the VA can provide similar level care, but the study period that he showed was before nurse practitioners at the VA had full practice authority. So we're like, yes, a supervised model works. So I give these three examples. He cites about 7 or 8 articles, but my point is the authors are drawing conclusions and promoting these articles, trusting that we're not going to go back and really critically examine what's in there. In short, the background is written in a way for the authors to frame their argument for policy. They compare nurse practitioners and physicians. And I think here is where there's a critical oversight that affects the validity of the entire study. It's basically this fatal flaw is an assumption that occurs at this point. So they only looked at prescribing patterns in states that had independent prescribing. The timing is a whole nother debate, but within these states, we have no idea the proportion of nurse practitioners who have actually elected to work without a physician. And that number has been very closely guarded by nurse practitioner lobby, because I think if we knew how small the number was after decades of this entire plan of theirs, I think if we knew that that number was really small, it would seal the fate of the whole thing. They assume that the NPs in these states are not being supervised, and they assume that just because the NPs work in a state with full practice authority, that the majority of NPs have actually chosen to work unsupervised. There is actually a news article, I'll send you the link, a news article from Illinois in 2020, and it gives us a little glimpse of how to estimate the total number of NPs that have signed up for full practice authority. So Illinois passed full practice authority in 2017. And this article was published in 2020, and they shared that out of 12,000 NPs, only 400 had signed up. So that's
wow,
about
that's remarkable. Very
it is.
Small. So what the possibility is that the majority of nurse practitioners do not want to practice independently. And I would say, you know, we know that the NP lobby and leadership, they don't want that part to be known. In fact, they tell nurse practitioners, if you're opposed to full practice authority, you need to be quiet because you're undermining our whole profession. Right. So there may be more that just, you know, aren't speaking out about it. But the reality is the data is indicating that most NPs don't want to practice independently.
Right. Which is, it's really interesting. Underlying this whole debate, you could talk about the balance of the policy and regulation with letting the market kind of figure itself out. we're in a position, I think, where because patients' lives are at stake, you know, we can't wait for the market to play it out. If the education doesn't prepare people to work alone, then they shouldn't be able to work alone. And that's the bottom line. And I don't need most of them to be prepared to work alone. I need all of them to be prepared to work alone. But it sounds like over time, it is playing out in the market. If we can have some data to show that nurse practitioners, the majority know it's not acceptable. The majority know it's not safe. 400 out of 12,000 in one state, which is state included in this study, because it's Illinois, that's, I think, about 3%. So if only 3% have elected to work independently, then 97% are working in a supervised model. And so when we look forward to the end of this study, we already know kind of the punchline of this study. We're basically studying, does a supervised model work? So we're saying, does a supervised model work? So yes, we're studying states with policy that says that nurse practitioners can work independently, but the reality is they're not working independently. So that makes our conclusions different. You have to understand how practice actually being carried out in these states. It's not the policy that makes an individual nurse practitioner safe. It's a policy that allows 12,000 to choose, which is kind of a nice little American principle, right? It's a policy that allows nurse practitioners to choose. 97% said nay, which means they're working in a supervised model. So the conclusion isn't that nurse practitioners aren't prescribing inappropriately. The conclusion could be that a supervised model actually works.
Which is what studies have shown over and over again. And it's always the caveat that's missing when you see these reports NPs can provide the same care as physicians. Yep. When practicing under physician supervision or following physician-created protocols, which is basically what Cochrane showed.
Yes. I hesitated where to put that into our podcast because I don't want to steal the thunder of the paper, but it's part of the background. And, you know, it's one of the most important things to understand is how you framed the foundation of your study. And you have to understand how all the pieces line up and how work is actually being carried out in states, so that you can interpret your conclusions correctly. And I think that that's a glaring deficit in the background and in the study design that shows they have no idea what's happening.
And they do point out in the study in their discussion that they don't really know which of the NPs are actually practicing truly independently versus who is working in association with the physician. I do think that that's something that we need a lot more transparency on. I always bring up the fact that we've had independent practice in states like Oregon and Washington State for a really long time, Alaska. And yet we don't see any real data showing whether that unsupervised practice is safe, what the outcomes have been. And again, we don't know how many, even though it's legal there, how many NPs are actually practicing autonomously. We just don't know.
As far as I can tell, after reading it, the article doesn't share that information either. So when we consider the groups and what they're actually doing, the next thing is exclusions. They exclude a number of different people. They exclude people that wrote less than 100 prescriptions for 65 and older. I think that's fine to do that, but you're also going to water down the data a good bit. You're going to lower the risk of finding abnormalities, right? So if I'm prescribing a bunch of medications to people over 65, then I'm going to be less likely to make mistakes.
Right. You have more experience. In fact, I'd be really interested to know those ones that prescribe less than 100 a year. Are they all 100 completely inappropriate? That could change the data.
Exactly. I would love to see it as well. But it just kind of waters down. It just kind of like makes it all lean towards being equal. I think the outcomes, are they okay? It's hard, right, to formulate a question where you get an outcome that tells you exactly what's going on. And this is kind of the ongoing struggle of science and statistics. And you know, it's this ultimate quest for the truth, you know. But I think that Beer's criteria, you know, they've been around for a long time. They're drugs that are potentially inappropriate. It doesn't mean they're always inappropriate. And the authors do go there. They don't do it till right at the end of the article. And the title doesn't say it either. I was kind of doing a little bit of a word game when I was reading it. I was like, I wonder if this article would mean anything if we added potentially inappropriate to the title, because then we'd be like, okay, what's the point of the article? If we did inappropriate prescribing to older patients, that means that it happened. That means that there was inappropriate prescribing, but
But that's not really known because the beer's criteria is potentially harmful.
Yeah.
Not always. Certainly, we will prescribe medication on that list because it's the right choice for the individual patient. After discussing the pros and cons, they do point out that hospice and palliative care can be exemptions. And they talked about they tried to carve that out or find out by removing patients that were in skilled nursing facilities and different settings. But that, I don't know that you can really, that doesn't necessarily mean a person's on hospice or palliative care just because they're living in a skilled nursing facility or a nursing home. I'm not sure that I buy into that, that they were able to really rule that out that way.
I'd like to look at the data. You know, I'd like to be a fly on the wall when those decisions were being made.
It would be especially interesting because they pointed out, it was so weird, that there were more nurse practitioners who either were really, really low on the inappropriate prescribing, and then there were a whole bunch in excess that were on the outliers of too much prescribing. And my question is, number one, does that just average out the data? And I mean, what did you think of that?
When I was reviewing this last night, it's like a reverse bell curve. Instead of a bell curve, you got two tails that go up. And I wonder if that kind of is a reflection of the education of nurse practitioners, if what they're inadvertently sharing is that there's a whole group of nurse practitioners that may not be safe. Hopefully, nurse practitioners will take that away and reflect on their own education, you know, the people that are in charge of that. But I think for all of us to look at it that way, I think you're exactly right.
It seems like that would be an opportunity to really dig into the data, to pull those outliers and see if you can't figure out a little bit more information about who those people are. Are they people with less years of education? Did they go to online training? Are those the ones that are truly practicing independently? We don't know, but what you said is true. This study has shown pretty clearly that there is a subset of nurse practitioners that are significant outliers in more inappropriate prescribing by their criteria, which is by prescribing medications on the BEERS listing for seniors.
Right. At this top level, where people got a really like an A+, NPs are doing great compared to physicians, right? But what you can do is picture the reverse. And so the physicians have a bell curve. So most of us kind of fit in. If you take like the negative image, so we kind of, if you imagine everybody in the study got a grade on their potentially inappropriate prescribing, there's a really high proportion of NPs that got an F.
Right.
Does that make sense? But F isn't 60 and above. And F, they go down to look at these folks, right? Like they got a 0 percentile. Look at the high proportion of people that got less than, you know, 30% on as a grade, you know, you're thinking. And so
they are egregiously getting it wrong.
Yes. And, you know, and it's neat. I'm really happy for the nurse practitioners that do get 100%. I would love to know who they are, where they trained, what their model of practice is like, because that's what we need. That top 10%, that's what we need, because they're doing what we all hope. We think, you know.
Yeah. And then the other extreme, what's going on there so that we can fix that?
Yes.
That's what this study really, to me, says, not just saying, oh, they're just as good. Looks like independent practice is great. Saying like, hey, there's some interesting stuff here. Some people are doing a great job. Some people are doing a terrible job. In the end, it averages out, but average isn't really what we're looking for. We're looking for high quality care for everybody. And so clearly there's some people doing it right, some people doing it wrong. And that, to me, is what this study is showing. And that needs to be investigated. Thank you so much to my guest, Dr. Teresa Camp Rogers, for joining me for a discussion on this article. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. If you'd like to learn more, I encourage you to get the books Patients at Risk and Imposter Doctors. They're available at Amazon and at barnesandnoble.com. And if you're a physician and you'd like to learn more about getting involved with our mission, which is advocating for physician-led care for all patients and truth and transparency among healthcare practitioners, please join our group, Physicians for Patient Protection. You can learn more at our website, physiciansforpatientprotection.org. Thanks so much, and we'll see you on the next podcast.